You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
The following is an encore episode of the Read to Lead podcast.
Hey, I'm Chris Ducker, author of Virtual Freedom and host of the new business podcast. And you've just stumbled upon one of my favorites. It's the Read to Lead podcast with my buddy, Jeff Brown.
You cannot achieve your dreams in the 21st century if you do not have the ability to persuade people to act on your ideas.
Welcome to the Read to Lead podcast with Jeff Brown. Jeff believes that if you desire to achieve true success in business and in life, then consistent and intentional reading is a must. The Read to Lead podcast will not only help you narrow this ever-important reading list, but also bring you key insights and valuable feedback from some of today's most successful and inspiring authors. And now, here's Jeff.
Thank you, Joy. Hello, and welcome to the podcast dedicated to your personal and professional growth. Each week, we sit down with a successful and inspiring author to talk about their latest book, and depending on their area of expertise, their thoughts on leadership, personal development, career, marketing, business, or entrepreneurship. In this episode, we'll sit down with Carmine Gallo, author of the book Talk Like TED, The 9 Public Speaking Secrets of the World's Top Minds. Carmine will help us understand the science behind what makes a memorable and effective public talk, the power of storytelling and why you must include stories in every presentation you make, and the role that passion plays in convincing your audience to take action right now. Carmine Gallo is the best-selling author of The Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs and is the communications coach for the world's most admired brands. A former anchor and correspondent for CNN and CBS, he's a popular keynote speaker. He's worked with executives at Intel, Cisco, Chevron, Hewlett-Packard, Coca-Cola, Pfizer, and many others, and writes a column for Forbes.com called My Communications Coach. His new book, being released the day this interview is being published, March 4th, 2014, is called Talk Like TED, The 9 Public Speaking Secrets of the World's Top Minds, and we are thrilled to have him here today. Carmine, welcome to the Read to Lead podcast.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Well, to get started here, I want to be careful not to leave anybody out along the way. So for that person listening, that one or two, maybe three people listening who have never heard of this thing called TED, how did it manage to become this elite stage for today's top thinkers and doers to share their ideas?
I'm glad you brought that up early. I think it is important that people understand what TED is. I don't think everybody needs to know everything about the TED conference. TED is a famous conference. It is this month celebrating its 30th anniversary. And anybody who is anybody in the nonprofit world and technology, the world's greatest thinkers and innovators, have been invited to give what's called a TED Talk. TED Talks are now viewed online 2 million times a day. The presentations have been posted online. They began posting in 2006, and they have thousands of presentations. The presentations are only 18 minutes long because, as you and I will probably talk about, Jeff, that's all they give the speakers. So it's not, this book is not so much about the TED conference. I covered the TED conference in about 2 pages. The rest of the book is how TED has up-leveled and become the gold standard for public speaking and presentation skills. And I believe, Jeff, like it or not, you are being compared to a TED Talk because they have become so prevalent, not only in America, but around the world. 2 million videos a day are being downloaded and streamed, and there are 5 smaller, what are called TEDx, or independently organized TED-like events that are organized and put on every day, 5 around the world. They're in 145 countries. So if you don't know about it, you probably should, and you're certainly being compared to a TED-like presentation.
Well, I was pleasantly surprised as I dug into the book over the weekend at the level of research that you've put into this. And I was wondering if you could share a bit about, exactly what Intuit, because I want people to understand, there's a science behind this as well.
I'm glad you picked up on that. The 9 public speaking secrets that I analyzed, that I've actually uncovered from watching 500 TED Talks, about 150 hours, are techniques and elements that I think anybody can use to improve their very next presentation. But you're absolutely right. I am a communication geek. Yeah, I love persuasion and communication. I've been studying the science of communication for years. And so I really wanted to dig into it. 18 minutes, for example. It doesn't matter whether your name is Bill Gates or Bono or Sheryl Sandberg. These are some of the famous TED Talkers. Nobody gets more than 18 minutes. Why does 18 minutes work so well? I wanted to know that, and there's actually research being done in Texas Christian University on why 18 minutes seems to be a really good, scientifically proven amount of time to get your idea across. There's research being done at Princeton University into storytelling, and most great TED presentations begin with story. So the point is, I wanted to really reinforce with everybody that the reason why TED videos go viral, and some presentations have been viewed up to 20 million times, The reason why they go viral is because they are inspiring, but more than that, they're wildly addictive. They actually connect to how your brain is wired to receive information. So the science part of it, I'm so glad you picked it up. The science part was the fun part. that was really interesting to me.
Well, what would you say to that person right now who's thinking, well, does this apply to me? I'm not giving lots of talks to rooms full of people. In other words, why is your book important for anybody in business, really?
Because the single greatest skill that will help you accomplish your dreams in the next 5 or 10 years, especially in the information age, is the ability to persuasively share your ideas. Jeff, you can have great ideas. You can have revolutionary, world-changing ideas. And you know this as a broadcaster and a former radio guy. If you cannot get your ideas across persuasively, succinctly, in a way that connects with people and inspires your audience, those ideas really aren't worth very much. Ideas only have value when they spark someone to take action. TED Talks spark people to action. They start movements. Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In. We know that now millions of women, right, are leaning in. There's Lean In groups. There's best-selling book. That started with an 18-minute presentation from Sheryl Sandberg. So a great presentation can start movements. But the point is, in all of these elements of a great TED Talk, it doesn't matter to me if you're speaking to a room of 1,000 people or if you're just pitching a prospect, across a table at Starbucks. The same components apply because, as we've just mentioned, it's the science of persuasion. It's not how to give a TED Talk on a TED stage in front of 1,000 people. It's really the science of persuasion.
Well, as we mentioned in the intro, Carmine also wrote the book, The Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs. Carmine, how did he differ from those famous for their TED Talks, or did he? Did he have some elements of what he did that were TED-like?
Remarkably similar. In fact, if you go to TED.com, and I would urge everybody to start visiting TED.com because you can see some of these great presentations, and they change every day. It's very updated website. But among the most popular TED videos, for some reason, it got up there. I don't even know how it got up there. But among the TED videos, the most popular is Steve Jobs's Stanford commencement address that he gave in 2005. That wasn't a TED Talk. So it's like the only non-TED video that's actually popular on the TED site. It was not a TED Talk, but it was actually about 15 minutes, he gave a brilliant talk that actually reflected all the elements that I picked up in some of the great TED presentations. And I'll tell you just a couple right off the bat. Storytelling. Storytelling is very powerful in all TED Talks. All the most popular TED Talks start with stories. In the Steve Jobs presentation, he told three stories about his life, living an empowered life and following your dreams. You know, do what you love, I think was the title of it. Three personal stories. Three is also an interesting number, and we can get into that. Many great TED Talks are broken up into three, or there are three stories, or three reasons to listen to that particular talk. Three is a very powerful number, and there's science behind that as well, Jeff. So if you're pitching a prospect, for example, it's good to give them three reasons to buy your product, or three reasons, you know, to invest in your service. If you give people more than that, they'll lose everything. So instead of giving people 12 reasons to buy your product, give them three.
Well, what about, it sort of plays into that, what about body language? Are there things we should or shouldn't be doing to impact audiences the right way when it comes to that category?
Yeah, there are some wonderful examples of what I call command presence, commanding body language on the TED stage, both from men and women. What I find that some of the great TED speakers do very well, and this applies to any type of presentation that you might give, is one, they make eye contact. So rarely will you see anybody read from notes. Rarely will you see anybody read from a very cluttered PowerPoint slide with nothing but words on it. In other words, they're making eye contact most of the time. Whereas in a professional business presentation, eye contact is lacking. People are looking at notes, people are looking at the slide more than they're making eye contact to the listener. There's also, they're forward, they're leaning into the audience instead of, you know, on their heels or slouching. They use their hands very well. Hand gestures are very important. And there's actually research being done in hand gestures at the University of Michigan that shows that people who are complex thinkers use complex gestures, which means they actually use gestures to complement almost every sentence. So I don't want people to be contrived, to try to be somebody they are not. But if you use hand gestures naturally, and it's easier for me because I'm Italian, so I always use my hands. But if you use hand gestures naturally, don't be afraid to use your hands. I think all of this takes practice. I just worked with somebody who recently gave a very well-received TED Talk, and she contacted me last year. She is a pioneer, actually, in a particular industry. In fact, most of your listeners probably have purchased her product. And she was really nervous about giving a TED Talk. She doesn't give presentations. And I talked to her about practicing, really practicing the presentation after we developed the narrative. And this, about 2 months ago, I told her, it's only 18 minutes. Why don't you practice every day? Do it once a day. And there was stunned silence for a second. She said, every day? I said, look, you got 2 months. That'll give you about 60 days. So you can do it 60 times, and it's only 18 minutes. Take 18 minutes out of your day. Well, she did it. She actually did it, and it gave her so much confidence on stage. You should have seen her, Jeff. She was using big gestures, confidence. She knew exactly where she was going next, and it was incredibly well-received. The sustained round of applause, and everybody loved it. And here's a woman who has never, never given a PowerPoint presentation. She was just get terrified about it, and she had a lot of confidence. So I think practice is a very important component, but once you practice and rehearse and internalize, Jeff, then it becomes even, you're free to use your gestures and to think about your body language and to think about your verbal delivery and how you're going to animate the story rather than being really nervous about what's next on my slide or what's the next thing I'm going to say.
That's great advice, especially for someone who is giving a presentation, and I'm someone who doesn't do that often. I'll be doing that later this year, so that's excellent for me to hear. And I knew practice was important, but as I read the book, I was a little bit surprised at how many times some would practice. It's interesting to see, you know, I think one person you mentioned in the book practiced 200 times.
That was a Harvard brain researcher. She's a research person, a data person, and her name is Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. She has one of the most successful TED Talks of all time. She practiced it 200 times. She told me personally, so I know this is a fact. Well, guess who discovered that TED Talk and loved it so much, she had her on her show. A lady named Oprah Winfrey. And it completely changed the course of Jill's life. Yeah.
So many talks that are so many events you go to, conferences, that sort of thing, you know, you're sort of a cattle call of presenters, and there might be three or four tracks at the same time, and everybody is sort of expected to oftentimes fill an hour. When really it's more important just to make your case and fill the time you need to fill to get that point across, not fill an hour. But I guess it goes back to that 18 minutes thing we were talking about. What does the science say about the length of a TED Talk? We talked about them being 18 minutes, but what effect does the length of a presentation have on the audience?
This is really important, and let's clear it up for everybody. When I say 18 minutes, in no way do I suggest that you can only present for 18 minutes. But the science does prove conclusively that the brain gets bored anywhere from about 10 minutes to 18 minutes, depending on which paper you read. I read a lot of academic papers, so you don't have to. But depending on what you read, the brain, as human beings, we tune out. We tune out, Jeff, no matter how great a speaker you are. We tune out after about 10 minutes to 18 minutes. Therefore, take that person, take your audience, and regroup. You know, pull them back in. How do you do that? It's a little easier on a podcast like this, actually, because there's two voices. So that's one way of doing it. Introduce a second voice. Apple does this very, very well. An Apple product introduction usually lasts about 90 minutes, and I've seen many of them. I've even written a whole book on Apple and Steve Jobs and how he used to present. They take about 90 minutes. Never do they go past about 10 minutes without introducing a second speaker or going to a demo or showing a video. So those are all ways to reconnect with your audience and bring them back in. Go to a video clip. Very few presentations use video. I use video all the time in my multimedia presentations. Very few people use video. Video can be a case study, or you can cut to a customer testimonial or some kind of video that you already have pre-prepared for your site. Introduce a second speaker. And sometimes that's also important if you do co-present with people. Or if you bring an engineer from your company or a salesperson from your company or something like that. So introducing a second speaker is always valuable. But find ways or simply do this. You've been presenting for 10 minutes. That's where you pause and you cut to a demo of your product, or you stop for questions and answers. Bring the other person in and get them involved in the presentation. But whatever you do, don't just assume that you can speak just by yourself for more than 18 minutes and keep someone's attention.
So as much as the length of the presentation, the key is just doing things that keep the audience engaged and mixing it up as you go along as appropriate.
I like what you just said. Those are different words for saying the same thing. Exactly, but that's exactly the point. Yeah. Mix it up, re-engage the audience. A professor or an instructor who I talked to said soft breaks. I like that term as well. So whatever you use, re-engagement techniques, soft breaks, I like your term the best, though. Mix it up. Mix it up. That's simple.
Well, we talked about the importance of practicing, and you offer in the book five sort of best practices to practice, five methods, and I was wondering if you could share about those in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, let's go through some methods of practice. Whether it's three steps or five steps, it really does depend on who you are and what you need to practice. But let me just give it to you in a nutshell. The first step, let's make this very specific. You're delivering a PowerPoint presentation to a prospect, a client. I know many of our listeners could be mid-level managers, so they're delivering updates to people within the company. Whatever it is, you're delivering a standard PowerPoint presentation. Several steps to practicing or rehearsing effectively. One, the first time you create that PowerPoint, there's something called notes. Use notes in PowerPoint. Go into the notes and write out exactly what you're going to say. for that particular slide. Don't worry about editing at this point. Just write what you're going to say. And then go through every slide and start internalizing what you want to say. And write out full sentences. So that's pretty much step one. Step two, and this is how I prepare for a keynote talk. Mm-hmm. The step two is to actually go into those slides, go into the notes, and start reducing the sentences, the bullet points. Don't have bullet points on the slide. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you can have bullet points in your notes. So pretty soon, you're only seeing like three or four sentences, very short sentences of several words. Practice delivering the entire presentation like that, literally standing up in your office or seated, however you're actually going to present, and going through each slide and practicing with just three or four bullets in the notes. Then the third step is actually reducing those notes to about one word. Mm. One word.
Okay.
And think about how many times we've actually already been going through every slide. So now I'm building my confidence. I know what's coming next. So now I've only got one word on each slide. Then the following steps are literally eliminating the words completely and practicing just the slides. I'm not even looking at notes now. Mm. Now I'm just clicking my slides. And I know exactly what I'm going to say. I don't have any notes in front of me. I'm just clicking my slides. But I'm walking through the PowerPoint exactly as I would be when I deliver this for real. And then finally, I practice day of, where I go into the venue ahead of time, or if it's in an office, I make sure everything is plugged in, that the display, the projector is working. The worst is when you're actually starting a meeting and you're still trying to figure it out. Oh, I got to bring in my PowerPoint and is the projector working? And, you know, so by the time all of this happens, by the time you go through all the steps, you've already rehearsed it at least 10 times. If you have a pitch or a PowerPoint, I'm going to say do it at least 10 times. 10 times rehearsing a PowerPoint pitch is, to me, much more than average, first of all. And it's enough to give you a lot of confidence so that you'll know when you see a slide, how you're going to start that slide, how you're going to end, how you're going to begin your presentation, when you're going to cut to a demo, how you're going to demo your product. Whatever it is, in terms of selling your idea. Mm. But by the time you go through a PowerPoint about 10 times, you'll be confident and ready to deliver when the stakes are high.
Well, I think for anybody who is familiar with TED, most of us, if not all of us, have seen the Sir Ken Robinson talk from 2006, Why Schools Kill Creativity. I've shared that with educators. I've blogged about it. I think it's the most viewed TED Talk ever, if I'm not mistaken.
20 million views.
Wow. Yeah. What is it about that one in particular, do you think, that stands out from some of the others?
Let me flip that.
Okay.
let me flip that. What do you recall from Ken Robinson's talk? Just one thing.
Yeah, one of the things that I enjoy about it is it's not so much telling jokes, but he just has a very natural way of delivering his content that causes you to laugh. I mean, he's just naturally funny.
Absolutely. Humor. And I have an entire chapter in Talk Like TED about the skillful use of humor. Humor is really important, and people don't quite know what to do with it. They think they have to tell a joke. Most of us aren't comedians. We're not Jerry Seinfeld. We're not, you know, working on jokes for like two. These guys work on jokes for years. It's very hard to tell jokes. People say, "Well, I'm not very funny." Well, Ken Robinson, and I would encourage everybody to watch, is called Sir Ken Robinson: Why Schools Kill Creativity. You can watch it on TED. It's hilarious, and yet he never really tells a joke.
Right.
What he uses, Jeff, is called anecdotal humor. It simply means using observational humor about yourself or something you've observed in the past, something that you found funny. And if you find something funny or humorous, there's no reason why maybe your audience won't find it as well. The point is, you're not there to elicit a belly laugh That's all you want to do is break down defenses, break down walls, make people receptive to your message, put a smile on their face, make them feel that you're authentic and natural and you're a fun person. You know? Because people do like to be around people who have a good sense of humor. And what Ken Robinson does very well is simply just use this very simple observational humor where he'll say, where he said something like, well, I'm in education. And the other day I was at a dinner party. Actually, when you're in education, you're rarely invited to dinner parties, but you know, regardless, and he kept going. And it's not like, oh my gosh, you're going to have people rolling in the aisles with laughter, but it puts a smile on your face.
Right.
And that's the majority of his talk, was breaking down defenses with this just very subtle humor. You don't have to be a comedian. You don't have to feel as though you need to tell a joke to get people to laugh.
And what I like, another thing I like about what that does is you have sort of this juxtaposition of the humorous moments with the really profound ideas that he shares that causes him to stand out all the more.
Absolutely. The humor is only one element of a good TED Talk. And he stands out for his use of humor. But he also tells stories. In fact, you probably remember the story. I forgot her name. I think it was, her name is Lillian, and he was talking about creativity. And he told a story of a little girl who they thought had some kind of learning disability, and she was very distractible. And her mother brought her to a doctor's office. The doctor pulled the mother aside and said, let's just watch Lillian, you know, for a few minutes. And he had music on and she was dancing. And he said to the mother, your daughter is not, there's nothing wrong with your daughter, you know, in terms of the school. She's a dancer. Mm-hmm. And that woman, and again, I forget her name, see, but I remembered the story. I haven't seen this mm-hmm. clip that you mentioned for a long time, but I remember the story. And Lillian became the choreographer of Cats. You know, she became a world-famous choreographer. So he used a story to reinforce his theme that schools kill creativity. Mm-hmm. Isn't that fascinating? And we talked about stories. Stories are really important. Stories are very memorable. You have to tell more stories. All great TED Talks have powerful stories.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that one specifically, because I've shared that story countless times with others because it impacted me greatly. And I love what he goes on to say about, you know, today we would give her medication and tell her to calm down. Thank goodness this doctor saw this talent in her that just hadn't been tapped into yet. And look what happened as a result.
Well, you just reinforced my point. I mean, this is a huge part of my book, Jeff. Mm-hmm. You just reinforced it. You use the story mm-hmm. in your own workshops and in your own presentations and blogs. You use that story, don't you?
I absolutely do.
It's the story that connected to you. Why don't you use all the facts and the figures and the data that he has in the talk? He has data. Why don't you use that? See, because it's the stories that are connecting with you as a person. And yet in business presentations, nobody uses stories. And I say nobody because, hey, I see business presentations every day. It's rare that people use really good storytelling techniques.
Well, we've all seen our share, too, probably, of presentations that lacked any real passion. I know I've probably been guilty of giving a few that lacked true passion. And I'm not just talking about passion for a product. It goes a little deeper than that. What role does passion play, in your view, Carmine, of delivering an effective talk?
I think passion is everything. And I'm not just saying that. I think that people who are passionate about a particular topic, who find true meaning in that topic, are by far, in my own experience and in TED Talks, by far they are the people who are the most inspiring leaders, the most inspiring presenters and public speakers. You have to be abundantly passionate about the topic that you're talking about. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't functionally deliver a presentation you're not entirely passionate about. I understand that. But to truly inspire people, you really have to have a deep emotional connection. There is, and I have a lot of research in the book there's a lot of research being done that proves that passion is indeed contagious. So when you meet somebody, Jeff, who is abundantly excited and passionate and enthusiastic about his or her product, it will rub off on you. It will become maybe one of the top three factors that you use to decide whether or not you like a person, whether or not you want to work with a person, or whether or not you trust a person. Is the level of passion they show about a particular product. The way I look at it, though, Jeff, and this is how we apply it to people who are pitching a basic product or a service or a mid-level manager or an executive. Think deeply about what it is that you're passionate about regarding that product. I had an interview once with Howard Schultz, the founder of Starbucks, because I write for Forbes and other platforms. And I'll never forget, we spoke for at least more than an hour, and he rarely mentioned the word coffee. And he said something incredibly profound to me. He said, well, coffee is what we make as a product, but that's not what I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about customer service. I'm passionate about employee engagement. So you see, you can take a simple product like coffee and make it so much deeper. But you need to ask yourself before the presentation, what is it that I'm truly passionate about? What is it about this product or my service or my brand that I'm really excited about? And typically, you will find that it is not the product itself. It's what the product will do to improve the lives of your prospect or your client. Somebody said it best that you go from me to we. You know, one way of thinking about a presentation is, how do I serve you? Not how do I serve myself? You know, how do I get this sale to make my commission? Instead, change that mindset. How do I serve you? How do I improve your life? And that will be a very different presentation than it's all about me. It's all about my product, my service. I want this sale.
Well, I want to, Carmine, transition to a couple of questions, not directly related to the book, but a little more personal in nature. And to start with, I'm curious to know, among all the leadership lessons that you've come to appreciate, if you had to narrow that list down to a single theme or central idea, what advice would you give?
In the information age, in the knowledge economy, ideas are your currency. Ideas are the currency of the 21st century. It's your trade in value. So I'm going to trade you my ideas for a job, you know, for a position, for a sale. You cannot achieve your dreams in the 21st century if you do not have the ability to persuade people to act on your ideas. So that's what I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about getting your ideas across, communication, and communicating in a way that leaves people with goosebumps, you know, and inspires people to think of their world differently or to dream bigger about their own careers.
Well, between your work at CNN, CBS, and of course your books, you've had the opportunity to impact a lot of people with what you do. And at the end of the day, what do you hope, Carmine, your legacy to be?
That's a good question, Jeff. that takes a little thought. I think getting back to this idea of helping people to change the world through their ideas.
Yeah.
I think there are so many ideas that die out there because they were never heard. All of us have the ability to inspire people to higher levels of achievement. We have the ability to inspire our teams to create more engaging, more inspiring companies and products that change the world. But none of it matters if you can't get your idea across. So I hope my legacy involves helping people communicate their ideas more successfully.
Excellent. Wondering if you could name for us a couple of books you've read, in that this is a podcast about the importance of intentional and consistent reading, that have had an impact on you, and maybe share how or why they impacted you as they did.
I actually read a lot of spiritual books.
Okay.
Yeah, I read a lot of spiritual books. So I enjoy thinking about our world in a much more meaningful way.
Yeah.
And that actually helps me become a better public speaker as well. I read some of Wayne Dyer's books, for example, a great spiritual teacher.
Yeah.
Whether or not you agree with his spirituality, but the point is that he's very much into how may I serve you. instead of what can I get out of this relationship or transaction. Mm. And that is very meaningful, certainly when it comes to more inspiring leadership and inspiring presentations. I read books and I watch pastors. I love watching Joel Osteen. Joel Osteen is a very famous pastor who reaches millions of people every Sunday. Joel Osteen, and I know this is a fact, and I wrote about it, was terrified of public speaking. Terrified of public speaking. And yet now he speaks to 40,000 people in a stadium for 30 minutes. He can give a 30-minute sermon. How do you do that? How do you go from having stage fright to inspiring 40,000 people? So I read a lot of those type of books, but in terms of just practical books, there are a couple of people out there who are in my world of communication. One, and she's a good friend, is Nancy Duarte. Mm. And she has written two very popular books. But the first one is called Slideology, which is all about design and presentation design, how to create presentations that are cleaner and more interesting and more inspiring. So she's sort of the guru when it comes to PowerPoint presentation design. So she's somebody to look for in terms of just practical matters.
Before we wrap up, I know the book is out today, but I'm curious to know what is on the horizon for you next.
I will be talking about Talk Like TED for a long time. I think there are so many wonderful techniques within the 9 secrets. They're not just 9 techniques. Those are 9 broad techniques. I think there's many other techniques within each chapter. So I will be talking about and promoting my TED book for quite a while. I'm going to stick to communication for a while. There is still so much more to be said and so much more to learn about how we communicate our ideas. And in a global economy, you are only as valuable as the ideas you have to share. So I am committed to helping people express those ideas more effectively.
I've appreciated a number of how-to type books I've read in the area of public speaking. Smart Talk from Lisa B. Marshall. There's a book called Secrets of Dynamic Communication from Ken Davis. We've had him on the show. And I love Talk Like TED. And as I mentioned earlier, just really appreciate the level of research that has gone into this, both on the neuroscience side and just all the TED Talks that have been viewed and what you've been able to extrapolate from those talks to find out what works and what doesn't. So well done on your part. And thank you so much for agreeing to be a part of the Read to Lead podcast. We really appreciate you having been here.
Thanks for inviting me. Thanks for the opportunity.
One of the things you probably noticed with Carmine, he's a very friendly, very personable guy. And if you'd like to network with him, one of the best ways to do that is on Twitter, at Carmine Gallo. That's CarmineGallo. I put a link to that in the show notes, if that helps. The Read to Lead podcast makes a great icebreaker and conversation starter when it comes to connecting with our guests on Twitter. So give that a go. Everything you ever wanted to know about Carmine and his new book out today, plus everything we talked about, links and various resources can all be found at the show notes page created just for this episode. You'll find it at readtoleadpodcast.com/034 for episode 34. Finally, I'd like to ask you to consider rating and reviewing the podcast. This helps keep the podcast visible and in front of new people. And if you give it a 5-star rating and leave a review so I know who you are, I'll be sure and mention you by name in an upcoming episode as a way to say thanks. Now, to rate and review the podcast, just visit readtoleadpodcast.com/iTunes, or you can go to Stitcher and leave a review there, readtoleadpodcast.com/Stitcher. Some of our latest reviews coming in from iTunes, and some very difficult to understand or make out iTunes handles nonetheless, are from Acasita. Great stuff. Love the content on this podcast. Thank you so much. Lee from Veggie Quest says, inspiring. Appreciate the incredible interviews and phenomenal reading list. And great show from Char Chaplin Love, LUV. It says, if you want to learn, be informed, be inspired, or just hear podcasting at its best, this is the show. Make sure to subscribe and never miss an episode. Thank you so much for those kind words. I really appreciate it. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Certainly hope to see you next time on the Read to Lead podcast.
Thanks so much for listening to the Read to Lead podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Become a vital member of the community. Visit us on the web at readtoleadpodcast.com and chat with other members at facebook.com/readtoleadnation. Until next time, remember, leaders read and readers lead.
Wow, I feel good. I knew that I would. I feel good. I knew that I would. So good. So good. And I got you. Wow, I feel nice. Like sugar and spice. I feel nice. Like sugar and spice. So nice. So nice. I got you. When I hold you in my arms, I know that I can do no wrong. And when I hold you in my arms, my love won't do you no harm. And I feel nice, sugar and spice. I feel nice, like sugar and spice. So nice. So nice, I got you. I hold you in my arm. I know that I can do no wrong. And when I hold you in my arms, my love can't do me no harm. And I feel nice like sugar and spice. I feel nice, like sugar and spice. So nice, so nice, I got you. Wow, I feel good. I knew that I would. I feel good. I knew that I would. So good. So good, I got you. So good, so good, 'cause I got you.
So good, 'cause I got you.